Once again, the Parsha of Pinchas begins in the middle of the story, in that the end of Parshas Balak really had the actions of Pinchas that he took against Zimri ben Sodo and Cosbi, and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas is Sachar Pinchas, the fallout, the reward. And the way the Pasuk begins, as it describes Pinchas in the very beginning, Perek Kaf Hei, Pasuk Yud, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Le'mor, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Heshiv es Chamasi Me'al B'nei Yisrael. So the simple translation of these words, which remains correct, Heshiv es Chamasi, he returned my anger, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger, so to speak, was directed against the Jewish people in the wake of everything that happened, and through the actions of Pinchas, he turned it around, Heshiv es Chamasi, until it withdrew. As we know, the Torah transmits messages on many wavelengths. And there is a classic word of the Vilna Gaon on these words, Heshiv es Chamasi. He returned my wrath. Where does it begin? The Torah tells us in the beginning of Parshas Kisisa that in order to protect the Jewish people against the Negev, against Ayin Hara, from being counted inappropriately, each one is to give a Machtis HaShekel. Machtis HaShekel, Truma LaShem. And once again, the word Machtis is a Hebrew word derived from the word Chetzi, and it means half. It says the Gaon, the word Machtis itself contains within it a lesson. For as we know, the Pasuk will tell us later on in Mishle, and all Psukim of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, as we've mentioned many times, are elaborations on concepts that are encrypted or embedded within the Torah itself. Tzedakah tatzil mimavis. Giving to a worthy cause, to a charitable cause, can save from death. And that's really what the B'nai Yisrael were looking to do through this Machtis HaShekel. In the fullness of time, they can be counted by any means. We find later on in the Sefer Shmuel, they were counted with pieces of pottery, by Fkedeim Bebezek. But in this first instance, because they were yet under the cloud of the Cheto Egel, they needed to give money, not pottery. Machtis HaShekel. It had this combined effect of being both the yearly collection for Machtis HaShekel and also the way that they were counted. Says the Gaon, if you look at the word Machatzis, you will find that at the center of the word lies the letter Tzadik. But Tzadik represents Tzedakah. And the Pasuk in Mishle tells us, Tzedakah tatzil mimavis. How is that manifested in the word Machatzis? Because actually, within the center of the word is the Tzadik. It has five letters. Immediately surrounding it on either side are the letters Ches and Yud, which represents Chaim. Further away, at the extremes of the beginning and the end of the word Machatzis, are Mem and Taf. And therefore the Tzadik in the middle brings closer Chai and pushes away Meis, Utzadokah Tatzil Mimavis. Now, there were times when the Jewish people were closer to death than they were to life. Example being the end of Parshas Balak. And that is why that state is referred to in the Pasuk as Chamosi. The translation of Chamosi is my wrath. But Chamosi is the opposite, whereby in the middle of Chamosi is Mem and Taf. And it is the Ches and the Yud that are further apart. And therefore, says the Gaon, the remez of Pinchas reversing this vector and realigning and recentering the Chai as opposed to the Meis, that is referred to as Heshiv es Chamasi. He reversed Chamasi, that is to say, he reversed the cohesion of the Mem and the Taf and rather put them back on the extremities, putting Chai in the center. So this is a classic nugget of the Vilna Gaon. To behold the way that he learned the Chumash, it's altogether a different dimension. Now, before we get to the main item that I'd like to speak about this evening, I want to devote a word or two to a most unusual group of women who are called Benos Tzelofchad, and they are to be found in Perek Kaf Zayin, in the very beginning. And let us see how the Torah describes them. Perek Kaf Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vatikravna Benos Tzelofchad. So they drew near, Ben Chefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menasheh, the Mishpachos Menasheh, Ben Yosef. So Tzelofchad ultimately was from Shevet Menasheh, Ve'eile Shemos Benosov, Machla, Noah, V'chogla, Umilka, V'sirtza. Some of those names have caught on more than others. Hakol Tole B'mazel. V'tamod L'lefnei Moshe, V'lefnei Elazar HaKohen, and they approached Moshe, and they said, Avinu Meis Bamidbar, Pasuk Gimel. Our father died in the midbar. Who lo haya besocha eda hanu adim al Hashem ba'adas Korach. He died in the midbar. We hasten to add, he didn't die there in the midbar, namely with Adas Korach. That would bode very badly for him. How did he die? Well, there are those who say that he was the Mekoshesh. The Torah doesn't say openly who the Mekoshesh was. Rabbi Akiva said it was Tzelofchad, and he got into trouble for saying that. Others argue. In fact, the Zohar Kodesh says that, I mean, he died somewhere. The Zohar Kodesh says that he was one of those that died in Parshas Chukas when they complained, one of those times that they complained, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu released serpents which bit and killed a number of them. And according to the Zohar Kodesh, he died at that time of the Nechashim, Hasrafim. And the Remez Ledavar, and this word will, to me, never look the same again, is if you look at the word Avinu in Pasuk Gimel, and if you look at the Tami Amikra, you will see a doubling over of a very interesting looking Tam, which is called, well, Zarka is its name, but it's actually shaped like a snake. And there's two of them. And the Zohar Kodesh says, now you know why. In any event, he wasn't part of Adas Korach. He didn't have any sons. And that means, things as we know it, them to be, his inheritance stands to be discontinued. Why should his name be deleted from his family? Just because he doesn't have sons. We are asking for, very pointedly, his nachala. Okay, and in the end, they got it. They were right. Now, interestingly, Chazal, so far from what I've seen, have only positive things to say about Benos Tzelofchad. Certainly the way the Gemara in Bava Basra in the 8th Perek describes them, they were chachmonios and darshonios and sadkonios. I mean, they knew how to learn, and they were righteous women, and everything they did was perfectly in order. It's interesting to note that according to the Sifrei, the Droshos Lishvach, that is to say, the very positive presentation and understanding of Benos Tzelofchad, begins from the very beginning. That is to say, already in Pasuk Aleph. Now, it sounds like Pasuk Aleph is just telling us who they were and who their parents were. But says the Sifrei, already we see the Pasuk is presenting them in glowing colors. Vatikravna Benos Tzelofchad, Ben Chefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menasheh. Where do we see the Pasuk is speaking in their praise? Says the Sifrei, the Pasuk traces them back to Menasheh. And at that point, the Pasuk did not need to say anything else. Because when we hear Menasheh, we know who Menasheh is. And the Pasuk goes on to say, Ben Chefer, Ben Gilad, Ben Machir, Ben Menasheh, Lemishbachos Menasheh Ben Yosef. He was one of the families of Menasheh, the son of Yosef. That already, we don't need to be told. We know that Menasheh is the son of Yosef. So why is the Pasuk telling us that Benos Tzelofchad are descended from Yosef? Because they are a credit to Yosef, and they have an attribute that Yosef had. And these are the words of the Sifrei. L'mishbechos Menasheh ben Yosef. Says the Sifrei, Keshem Shechibev Yosef es Eretz Yisrael, Just like Yosef showed his love for Eretz Yisrael, kachibibu espinos Tzelafchad. So too, the daughters of Tzelafchad displayed their love for Eretz Yisrael because they are asking for nachla in Eretz Yisrael. Where do we see that Yosef displayed his great love for Eretz Yisrael? He asked to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, quite true. So did the other brothers, ultimately. I mean, they all went back. They were all taken back. But there is a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Vayechanan, and it's a bittersweet Medrash because it compares and contrasts Yosef with Moshe in this regard. And this is what it says. Yosef, Shehoda ba'artzo, Yosef, wherever he went in the world, he always mentioned his origins and the fact that he belonged in Eretz Yisrael. Where do we see that? Because even when he's in the middle of a pit, and he's talking to the Zara Mashkim, in the end of Parshas Vayeshev, it says, Ki gunov gunavti me eretz ho'ivrim. And it may not have been that fashionable in his state at that time to make reference of the fact that he's from Eretz HaIvrim. The Mitzrim didn't like the Ivrim so much, certainly not all of them. But that's who he is. He's me Eretz HaIvrim. Yosef Shehoda Ba'artzo, Nikba Ba'artzo. Because he always referred to his land and connected himself, identified himself with his land, Nikba Ba'artzo. So he was zocheh to be buried there. And now, says the Medrash, Moshe Shalohoda ba'artzo, lo nikba ba'artzo. Moshe was not always identified as being from Eretz Yisrael. And what does that mean? What is the source of all of this? Says the Medrash, because it is said about Moshe, ish mitzri hitzilonim yad haroim. When Yisro's daughters came back, they identified him as an ish mitzri, not as an ish ivri. Now this Medrash is a pele on a number of levels. Firstly, Yosef really was taken from Eretz HaIvrim. Moshe wasn't. He was never in Eretz HaIvrim. So in a sense, it's a higher standard that he should be called an Ivri. He was almost like a non-practicing Ivri, because he had never been there before. So he wasn't even an expatriate. He was a prepatriate. And still he should have called himself an Ivri. But moreover, the wonder upon wonder is that Moshe didn't say any of this. Yosef said about himself that he was Me'eretz HaIvrim. Moshe never said he was an Ish Mitzri. In fact, Moshe didn't say anything about this. Moreover, Moshe didn't even hear the daughters of Yisro when they came back and they said Ish Mitzri, so because they made a mistake and they called him an Ish Mitzri, so then that's called Lo Hoda Ba'artzo. That's a big chiddush. Where exactly is he meant? What is he meant to have said? And when is he meant to have said it? So I heard many years ago from my uncle, Rav Kuperman, a chiddush, but he believes this is what the Medrash is saying. Moshe didn't hear the daughters of Yisro say Ish Mitzri Tzilani, quite true. But he did have the whole Torah dictated to him as he was to write it down. And therefore, the tevia, the criticism on his level of Moshe, is that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, and now write, the daughters of Yisro said, Ish Mitzri Lani, he should have put his pen down and objected and said, I cannot allow myself to be called an Ish Mitzri. Now, we don't know the rules of when Moshe was able to object as he was writing the Torah. The default position is never. But there are times that we know that Moshe objected, at least for Kavod Shamayim, right from the very beginning. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, write, Nase Odom. And Moshe said, objection. Nase Odom, that gives room for those who believe in polytheism, etc. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, a person who believes that will get it from anywhere. In the meanwhile, we have business to take care of called writing the Torah. But we do see that Moshe, if he felt something was objectionable, he objected. And that's quite a chiddush. At the words Ish Mitzri, he should have balked and questioned. Okay. In any event, Yosef, in this respect, is remembered as Hoda Ba'artso. If you, wherever I go, you ask me, what am I? I'm my Eretz Ha'ivri. And says the Sifrei, back to the Sifrei, just like he had such a special place, Eretz Yisrael, in his heart, so too Bnei Salaf, but you see what they're prepared to do to get a Nachla in Eretz Yisrael. And the Netziv here asks a rather uncomfortable question in his Peirush to the Sifrei, Emek HaSifrei. And that is, and you'll excuse me for asking, says the Netziv, but I have a good teretz. What do we see in Bnei Salafcha? What are the choices? A portion of Nachla in Eretz Yisrael, or not a portion of Nachla in Eretz Yisrael? So to put it delicately, how do we know that what's motivating them to say we'd like to take our father's Nachla in Eretz Yisrael, how do we know that that is Ahavas Eretz Yisrael? Perhaps it is Ahavas real estate. What can they lose? It's not a nice question, but if we don't ask it, we didn't understand the Sifrei. Says the Netziv, the Teretz is as follows. In next week's Parsha, Parshas Matos, we find that there are 2.5 tribes who come and petition Moshe to stay on the east side. It's a very complicated Parsha, and Nishne Parsha Zo, Mirtz Hashem, when we get there. But that's what they asked for, and they were given it. The half of those 2.5 tribes is half of the tribe of Menashe. Moreover, we should know that of the sons of Menashe who took on the east side was Gilad. And these daughters of Tzlafchad are descended from Gilad, and Hefer ben Gilad. However, says the Netziv, we should note that in Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Yud Zion, we find that as much as many of the families of Gilad stayed on the east side, but the brothers of Tzalafchad did not. And they waited until everybody else took their Nachala in Eretz Yisrael proper, on the west side. Now the Netziv suggests that as much as this is not presented to Moshe Rabbeinu until next week's Parsha, but it's based on the fact that these territories have been conquered, which they have already, as of Parshas Chukas. I mean, these are the territories of Sichon and Og. And it is possible that the tribes of Menashe, all of those who ultimately were interested, were already discussing it amongst themselves. And therefore, we should pay attention to a very interesting diyuk from the Pasuk. For they say, have a look at Pasuk Dalet of Perek Kaf Zayin. Lama yigara shem avinu mitoch mishpachto ki ein lo ben. Why should our father's name be discontinued? He has no son. Tenalonu achuza. Please give us a holding. Besoch achei avinu. We're asking for a nachla amongst our father's brothers. That's a very specific expression. They do not say betoch shvateinu or anything else. And the point, says the Netziv, is that Bnei Salafchad, they have an opportunity, actually, if they want, like everybody else, to ask for a Nachala now on the east side, but they didn't ask for it. They're prepared to wait, and it's a good few years. But wait they will, on the west side, that is Ahavas Eretz Yisrael. And that's already coming from Yosef. So this is the Peirush of the Netziv on this comment of the Sifrei. Now, what I'd like to speak about at this point is a concept that we are introduced to in Revi'i of this week's Parsha as the authority transfers from Moshe to Yehoshua. And if we have a look at the final Pasuk of Perek Kaf Zayin, that's Pasuk Kaf Gimel, and let us see how this is described. Vayismoches yadav alav vayitzavehu. So this is Moshe, he took Yehoshua, He rested his hands on him, vayitzaveihu, and he charged him, meaning he invested him with the authority as the leader of the Jewish people when the time comes. Kasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe. And so, what we have here is Moshe handing over the authority to Yoshua. And the way that it's referred to in Pasuk Kaf Gimel is vayismoches yadav, he rested his hands on him. And this gives us the concept that is known as smicha. Smicha meaning to conferring the authority. Now, what is important for us to be aware of is that the smicha that we're talking about in this week's parsha, and that I'd like to talk about for a little bit more, should not be confused with the smicha that we refer to nowadays when a person becomes a rabbi and he takes smicha, which is a very important thing, and it verifies that he knows how to paskan halacha, but that is not at all the smicha that the halacha refers to, that Chazal refer to when they talk about smicha. When they talk about smicha, they are referring to the authority that allows a person to act as a member of a Beis Din in every sense of the word, including administering the punishments of the Torah, like for example, Malchus, and if the Sanhedrin is back on location, even capital cases, and also Knossos. Knossos are any monetary payment which is in excess of the money that's actually owned. Knossos is a fine, like Kefel, for etc., etc. Also, one needs Dayonim Musmochim. And the question is, how do you get it? Well, how did it start? Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one to receive this authority from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. From that point on, he gave the smicha to Yoshua. And the only way that a person can receive smicha is from a person who has smicha, all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It has to be an unbroken chain. What are the conditions that a person needs in order to receive this smicha, the original smicha? Well, firstly, he needs to be competent in paskening halachas in all areas of Torah. That's his own level of knowledge. Secondly, as we said, he can only receive smicha from a person who himself has smicha. And thirdly, the conferral of smicha can only take place in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara darshans, ki mitzion teitzei Torah, only from Tzion can there be smicha. And the smicha continued almost 2,000 years. It went all the way through the Nevi'im, of course, up to the Tanoim, and a number of generations even into the Amoraim, even to the times of the Talmud itself. And then there was no one left in Eretz Yisrael to give smicha. It was discontinued. Now, what's interesting is, how can you tell if a person has smicha? There's no S at the end of their name. But the Gemara says that a person who has smicha is called Rebbe, as opposed to someone without smicha who is called Rav. That is the difference between them. If you're a rabbi without the smicha, you're called Rav. If you're a rabbi with the smicha, you're called Rebbe. And this, by the way, is by and large the reason for the difference between the Tanoim, the rabbis of the Mishnah, who were all called Rabbi. Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yishmael, they're all called Rabbi with a Yud at the end. Most of the rabbis in the Gemara are called Rav. Rav Chista, and Rav Papa, and Rav Huna. And perhaps without this background, we may understand that it's, well, if you're a Tana, so then, because you're a Tana, Rabbi of the Mishnah, you get the Yud at the end. And if you're Rabbi of the Gemara, you get just Rav. But it's not that at all. It happens to be because, by and large, the rabbis of the Mishnah lived in Eretz Yisrael. That's when the Mishnah was redacted. And living in Eretz Yisrael, they were able to receive smicha. It was much more accessible to them. And therefore, most Tanoim are called Rebbe. Some Amoraim, some rabbis of the Talmud itself, are called Rebbe. Those that made their way to Eretz Yisrael. Most of them did, and therefore, if they can't get Eretz Yisrael, they can't get smicha, and therefore most of them are called Rav. Some of them, interestingly, are referred to in the Talmud both as Rav, so-and-so, and Rebbe, so-and-so. They get both titles. And the reason is very simple. At a certain point, they made their way to Eretz Yisrael. And the classic case in point is Rav Zeira. Well, sometimes he's Rav Zeira, and sometimes he's Rebbe Zeira. And Rashi explains, and we know it's much discussed, his ascent to Eretz Yisrael. So he started off in Bavel. And when he's in Bavel, he's called Rav Zeira. From the time that he gets to Eretz Yisrael, he was able to receive smicha. And he came back as Rabbi Zeira. And that's why Rashi says, sometimes you can actually date the statements of Rav Zeira versus Rebbe Zeira, should ever there be a conflict, and you're wondering which one was his final word, you can tell if it's got Rabbi Zeira signed on him, because you know that that was an appellation that he received later on. But as we mentioned, at a certain point, three or four generations into the Talmud, that is to say the Gemara, the days of the Amoraim, the smicha was discontinued. And that's it. Until further notice. Because one can only get smicha from a person who has smicha. As soon as the chain is broken, that's the end of the chain. And that's pretty much how things rested. Until we find a statement of the Rambam. The Rambam discusses this matter in the Mishneh Torah, and also in his Perush on the Mishnayos. But his clearest presentation, of course, is in the Mishneh Torah, which is in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet, Halacha Yud Aleph. And we need to watch carefully, pay attention to everything that he says. Nirim li hadvarim. It appears to me. Now, whenever the Rambam says nirim li hadvarim, that is an indication that what he's about to say is not coming from an explicit source in the Torah or in the Gemara, but based on his collective Rambam's Das Torah, this seems to him to be correct and reasonable. Nirim li hadvarim. It appears to me the following is correct. If all the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael would agree limnos dayanim, to appoint certain individuals as dayanim, vilis mochosam, and to confer smicha upon them, hari elu smuchim, they would attain the status of musmachim completely, like the original smicha. V'yesh leim nadun dinei knosos, they would then have the authority to judge cases of knas, which you need a mumcha, you need a musmach for. V'yesh leim mismoch acherim. And they could, this individual now, having been vested with smicha, could now, as an individual, give smicha to someone else. The Rambam concludes and says, v'im hayasham somuch mipi somuch, v'hadovar tzorich hechreya. The matter awaits final confirmation. V'hadovar tzorich hechreya. So the Rambam began with this radical idea that the smicha can be restarted with the words nirim li hadvarim, and concluded with the words, the matter needs to be, awaits a full resolution. What is the conceptual underpinnings of what the Rambam is saying? Rabbi Chana Wasserman, in the Sefer Kovach Yurim, explains that what the Rambam is saying is that the Jewish people always have within them the power of the Sanhedrin. Latent within the Chachomim of Eretz Yisrael, you have the power, shall we say, dissipated or spread out collectively amongst them of the Sanhedrin. Now, any one of them doesn't represent that authority unless you've got smicha and an unbroken chain. But if all of them get together, then their smicha for one individual is no less than the smicha of a member of the Sanhedrin, because between them and amongst them, they contain collectively the koach of the Sanhedrin. It remains, it doesn't go away. It's just no longer localized in an individual unless they localize it. That's the chiddush. Now, the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah formulated this idea. He doesn't say why he thinks that this is true. He just says he thinks it's true. But Divri HaRambam, in this respect, Aniim b'makom echad v'ashirim b'makom acher. The Rambam has spoken about this matter as well already, in two places in his Perush on the Mishnayos, in the Perush to Mishnayos Sanhedrin and the Mishnayos Becharus. Now, in the Mishnayos Sanhedrin, the Rambam not only propounds this idea that the smicha can be restarted through Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, spontaneously generated, but explains why he thinks it must be true. Because the pasuk says, "V'ashiva shavtayah kavar rishona," the Torah has predicted that the shoftim will come back. Now, the Rambam is of the opinion, number one, that nothing about Din Torah will change. That's one of the Yud Gimel Ikkarim for the Rambam. Nothing about Din Torah will change, which means the way that you need to get smicha will remain the way that you need to get smicha. It has to come through an appropriate channel. Which means even after Mashiach comes, halacha won't change. So smicha is going to have to come from somewhere. And moreover, the Rambam is further of the opinion, and he doesn't elaborate, but he says from a number of psukim it's clear that the shoftim will come back before Mashiach comes. Now, interestingly, he doesn't refer to this, but the Seder of the Shmona Esrei would seem to indicate that. And according to the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Tet Zayin and Yud Zayin, the order of the brachos of Shmona Esrei represents the order as we anticipate events to unfold. The brach of Hashiva Shevteinu, that's after Kibbutz Golios, okay, but it's before Estemach David, Meir Tatzmiach, which is about Mashiach. In any event, the Rambam says it's going to happen before Mashiach comes, which means it has to be able to happen that way. And who's here? We're here. The Jewish people are here. The Jewish people must contain within themselves the ability to confer smicha. Those are the words of the Rambam in his Perush on the Mishnayos to Sanhedrin. He doesn't include that background in Mishnah Torah, because Mishnah Torah is discussing the halacha, not discussing why he thinks that's the halacha. But that's why. In the third place, in his Perush on the Mishnah, in Maseches Becharus, in the fourth Perek, he just reiterates and stresses that the Chachamim in question are absolutely and purely the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, not the Chachamim of Chutz La'aretz. He says that very pointedly, that as the Gemara says in a number of instances, a number of contexts, only the Kehila within Eretz Yisrael is rated with regards to certain things, and as far as the Rambam is concerned, this is the same. Ki Mitzi and Teitzei Torah. So those are the words of the Rambam. And that's how the matter lay for approximately 350 years. No one really acted on these words of the Rambam until the beginning of the 1500s. And there was a certain individual or group around him who decided to reenact and reinstate the smicha process, the real smicha. The individual in question was called Rabbi Yaakov Beirav. Rabbi Yaakov Beirav lived in Tzfat in the early 1500s. He was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yosef Karo. I don't know too much about him, but actually, if you only know that about him, I think for most people that's enough. He was the Rebbe of the Shulchan Aruch. And he lived in Tzfat along with Rabbi Yosef Karo and many others. And it should be noted that Tzfat at that time in the 1500s was the Torah center of Eretz Yisrael. The majority of Torah, of Talmidei Chachamim, of outstanding Chachamim, lived in Tzfat. And Mari Beirav wanted to reinstitute the smicha. And what's very interesting is to understand why. And as often is the case, there's more than one reason. But there is a fascinating, dominant reason here. What happened all of a sudden that smicha needs to come back? Aside from the general authority that will be added to the Psak Halacha of that Beis Din. But it was actually as a result of a very strong desire on the part of a segment of the Jewish people namely those that had been expelled from Spain in 1492. Prior to that time, many of them had been living as non-Jews. They were known in Hebrew as Anusim. Some refused, and some didn't refuse. It was with a heavy heart. Whatever they could keep, they kept. But they couldn't be detected. Many of them used to light their Shabbos candles in the basement. So much so, there is actually a Catholic custom in certain parts of Spain to light candles on Friday night, because no one knew they were Jewish and took on. So they didn't look Jewish and they were lighting candles, and some non-Jews still do that. And they finally, they were expelled from Spain, and they were haunted by the way that they had been living for those years, albeit bonus. And some of the things that they had transgressed were very serious, including Chiyuvei Karis. And they were looking for expiation. They were looking for kapara. And the Maribe Rav says, there is a way. Because the Mishnah tells us, in the end of Maseches Makos, Daf Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph, that anyone who is Chayev Kares, if he receives Malkus, then he's exempt from Kares. So it's fascinating to consider that the primary, if not the primary motivation or force behind the idea of reinstituting the Beis Din was in order to have a group that had the authority of the Beis Din to issue Malkus for these desperate people who were looking to get out of their state of Karis. Ad Kedekah. So, Asa Maisa, Maribe Rav, he gathered together originally the outstanding Chachamim of Tzfat. There were 25 of them in number. And they represented the creme de la creme of Torah in Tzfat. And they conferred smicha on Maribe Rav. As a musmach, he then gave smicha to four other individuals. Two of them, we know who they were, Rabbi Yosef Karo himself, and the Mabit, Rabbi Moshe ben Yishai Mitrani, who was his colleague on the Beis Din. And there are theories as to who the other two were, but these are two we know for sure. And in fact, later on, Maribe Rav opened up, once that had been done, he gave a public drosha in Sfat as to why he felt that the smicha could work. And the other Rabbonim, and all in all, the second wave, there were 200 Rabbonim who gave smicha to Rabbi Yosef Karo, and some say that is why he's called Maran Rabbi Yosef Karo. Maran means the master. But Maran is also Rosh HaTevis, Mimataim Rabbanim Nismach. Maran Rabbi Yosef Karo. And that's it. Now, all of this is happening in Sfat. In the meanwhile, there are another group of Talmidei Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael who did not concur with any of this at all. And they were in Yerushalayim. And the head of that group was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, the Maralbach, Rabbeinu Levi, Ibn Chaviv. And the Maralbach wrote to Maribe Rav and protested and laid out his reasons why he thought that what the Maribe Rav had done was incorrect. Firstly, says the Maralbach, you have taken action over something that the Rambam himself concluded was inconclusive. Because as much as the Rambam said, Nirum Yadvarim, it seems to be correct. But he concluded with the words, Vadover Tzarech Echreya. So the Rambam himself did not sign on the dotted line of this halacha. But you have taken action over it already. That's number one. How can you be more sure than the Rambam himself was about his own halacha? Number two, the Rambam, the words of the Rambam are that if all of Chachmei Yisrael will get together, they can confer a smicha on someone else. Says the Maralbach, with all due respect to the Talmidei Chachamim in Tzfat, and no one was disputing, by the way, that they represented the majority of Talmidei Chachamim. It was the dominant Torah center. However, says the Maralbach, dominant is one thing, but that's not called all. borrowing a Talmudic expression, says the Maralbach, there are also Talmudic scholars in Yerushalayim who do more with their time than pick vegetables. In other words, you're looking for all of the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, Chachmei Yerushalayim should have been consulted as well. You may have Rove, but the Rambam didn't say Rove. You are taking a liberty, a further liberty, by invoking the principle of Rubo Kekulo, that the majority is like the whole. It's not clear that the Rambam would be prepared to say Rubo Kekulo. He didn't say anything like that. He said Kol Chachmei Yisrael. And moreover, says the Maralbach, even if we were to concede that a majority is enough, but the way a majority works in a Sanhedrin and the like is that everyone needs to get together, and then however the majority rule is called the majority. But you can't ab initio take only what represents the majority without even including in the discussion that which would represent the minority and say, so we have the Rove. It's not the Rove of the whole thing, because the whole thing wasn't there in the first place. And therefore, Chachmei Yerushalayim should have been consulted before the Maisa. And then we could talk about it. And if we would have been outvoted, so be it. But at least we would have presented our position. I happen to think that the smicha cannot be reinstated. If I would have been given a chance to say that, me and my colleagues, maybe you would have thought differently. And now, said Maralbach, it's too late. Because once you've already paskened, so you are invested in that position, and the discussion won't be balanced anymore. And moreover, said Maralbach, smicha can only come from Eretz Yisrael. As the Torah says, Ki Mitzion Totei Torah. It goes on to say, Udvar Hashem Mirushalayim. That is a double reason why, if something of this magnitude, which represents the special nature of Eretz Yisrael, it certainly should not have happened ignoring or avoiding, sidelining those that live in Yerushalayim. It should have come from Yerushalayim itself. So these are very pointed questions that the Maralbach raised to the Maribe Rav, and the Maribe Rav responded and answered all of them. Maribe Rav said, firstly, you say that the Rambam is uncertain about this because he says, Vadover tzarech echreya, the matter needs to be finalized, which sounds like he had not finalized it. So without getting into details of the halacha, the Maribe Rav said, when the Rambam said the matter needs to be finalized, he wasn't talking about this idea. If you read the words of the Rambam carefully, it's a nuanced issue of one of the particulars as to whether one person needs to have smicha, maybe three people need to have smicha. That's what he needs. It's the particulars of how to work it out. But the idea itself, the Rambam was never in any doubt. If you read his parish on the Mishnah, there's no doubt there. And if you read his words in the Mishnah Torah, Nirim li hadvarim, when he concludes by saying, Vadover tzarech echreya, as again, it's about the small print, so to speak, it's about prote dinim. But the idea itself, the Rambam certainly considers it to be the way that things can and should be. Moreover, said the Maribe Rav, when the Rambam says all, he certainly means most Rav is certainly fine. And he contested the Maralbach's position that Rove requires everyone to be there and then have a Rove. He said it's not true. The Rove is enough. They don't need to be together. And it doesn't need to be from Yerushalayim. So this now developed, and there was a correspondence back and forth. Ultimately, a sefer developed on each side. Each one has their kuntras hasmicha, what's called, in the tshuvas of the Maralbach and the tshuvas of the Maribe Rav. Now, one final personality that needs to be brought into the equation here, who was not in Eretz Yisrael at all, so he's really looking at all of this from the side, so to speak, although he later came to Eretz Yisrael. He was in Egypt at that time. That's the Radvaz, Rabbi David ben Zamran. He was known to be one of the outstanding Talmidei Chachamim of the time. And he actually has a commentary on the Rambam's Hilchos Sanhedrin, so he tells us everything that he thinks about all of this within that commentary. And he happened to agree with the Maralbach. He agreed with Chachmei Yerushalayim that there was not enough of a basis to restart the original smicha. He agreed with the Maralbach on a number of points and had a couple to add of his own. He agreed with the Maralbach that the Rambam was uncertain. That is to say, when the Rambam concludes with the words "V'hadavar tzarech echreya," the matter is not yet resolved, it means the entire matter. the whole thing about starting the smicha, not just particulars. He sided with the Ravach about that. Moreover, says the Radvaz, in order to qualify for a person to receive smicha, the Rambam's already told us he needs to be proficient in rendering halachic decisions in the entire Torah, says the Radvaz. I don't know anyone like that. Now, that's a difficult question to answer, because presumably the Maribe Rav said, well, we do. But that now you have to define what does it mean to be proficient in the entire Torah. The Radvaz says he doesn't know anyone who could do that. So no one qualifies if that's the case. Moreover, says Maribe Rav, pardon me, says the Radvaz, if you look at the background, which we have already mentioned, why is the Rambam so convinced that it must be that the smicha can start? Because va'ashiva shuvtayich kvarishona means there must be, the smicha process must be able to come back. How's it going to come back? If not from the Jewish people, there's no more smicha anymore. Says the Radvaz, I am in wonderment about that proof. I'm in wonderment about that argument for a very simple reason. We have a tradition that the arrival of Mashiach will be preceded by the arrival of Eliyahu HaNavi. Now, Eliyahu HaNavi has many qualifications. He's Eliyahu, he's a Navi, he's lots of other things, and he's also a Musmach. As the Rambam himself tells us in his introduction to his Perush on the Mishnah, Eliyahu HaNavi, while he was yet Eliyahu HaNavi, received smicha from Achya Shiloni, which means that the advent of Mashiach, if it's going to be preceded by Eliyahu HaNavi, that means that someone with smicha will come back, and all you need is one person. So that's a very interesting point, to put it mildly. And the Radvaz expresses wonderment that the Rambam was so convinced, based on the fact that the smicha will come back, it must be that it can come from the totality of the Jewish people. What about Eliyahu HaNavi? And there are responses for the position of the Rambam, but this is it sounds like a very devastating kasha of the Radvaz. How do things end off? The smicha in Sfat, as far as we know, extended for four generations. That is to say, Maribe Rav bestowed smicha to his disciple, Rabbi Yosef Karo. Rabbi Yosef Karo bestowed smicha to his Talmud, Rabbi Moshe Alshich, and the Alshich gave smicha to Rabbi Chaim Vital. And the Chidah in the Birkei Yosef says he saw the ksav smicha of the Rabbi Moshe Alshich to Rabbi Chaim Vital. After that, the smicha discontinued. It's not exactly clear why. Rabbi Tikutinsky in the Sefer Ira Kodesh Vamikdash in the Chelek Dalis suggests that the oppression, even in Sodom, even in the Tzfat, when you hear about the oppressors, you'll understand why. It drove the Yishuv even away from Tzfat, and therefore there was no longer any centralized Yishuv there that felt that they were settled enough to give smicha, and there the matter rested, it seems. We should mention, is the Rambam himself sure that the smicha could begin or not? Reverberations of Shittas HaRambam we can find elsewhere in this week's Parsha. Because one of the items that we have in Parshas Pinchas is Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh, of course, is dependent on Kiddush HaChodesh. And who is Mekadosh the Chodesh? Well, the Beis Din is Mekadosh the Chodesh, and the Beis Din needs smicha in order to be Mekadosh the Chodesh. Now, smicha, as we know it, stopped at a certain point. In fact, it was Hillel. Now, this is Hillel the Third, so he's actually in the time of the Amoraim, in the time of the Talmud. He's the one that set the Luach, and then smicha was discontinued. And the common understanding is, which is itself quite a chiddush, is that Hillel, the Nossi, he actually was Mekadosh in advance all of the Rosh Chodeshim. Rosh Chodesh needs to be sanctified in order to have the status of Rosh Chodesh. It's not enough to have the astronomical information as to when Rosh Chodesh should fall. It needs to receive the status of Rosh Chodesh. So this last week, when it was Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, how did it become Rosh Chodesh Tammuz? So the common understanding is, which is the opinion of the Ramban, is that Hillel was actually Mekadosh all of the Chadashim. He made the Cheshbon and was Mekadosh all of them in advance. Ad kedei kach. So the answer will always be, Ad bias goel. If someone says, well, who made last weekend or 3 weeks ago into Rosh Chodesh, the answer will always be Hillel Hanasi the Third, until further notice. But the Rambam, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, in Mitzvah Sasei Kuf Nun Gimel, states that the status of Rosh Chodesh on an ongoing basis is dependent on a continuous Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael. And, says the Rambam, one should know that were it to be the case, and he states that it will never be the case, and there is actually a chain of ongoing Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael, sometimes very small, but it doesn't matter, says the Rambam, were there ever to be a case that there was no Jew in Eretz Yisrael at the time of Rosh Chodesh, it would not have the status of Rosh Chodesh. Ad kedei kach. Now what we see from here, as the Meshech Chochma in Parshas Bo explains, is in a sense, it looks like the Rambam Neshitoso, that is to say, there's no Bezdin, there's no formal Bezdin. But whichever Torah, Jewish community lives in Eretz Yisrael, they contain within themselves the collective power of the Bezdin, with the ability to Kaddish Chadashim. They never dispute when Rosh Chodesh is, because why and how could they? The Luach has been set. And therefore there is an automatic consensus on a monthly basis of the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael, that this will be Rosh Chodesh, and that is what makes it Rosh Chodesh, because now you have the Koch of Bezdin declaring, in as many words, Mekudosh on that day. And that's a big Chiddush, but it's the same Rambam. And that's how the matter rested then in Tzfat in the 1500s. With the birth of the state, there were attempts to once again reinstate the Beis Din, and not only the Beis Din, but also the Sanhedrin, and it should be noted that that is an altogether different step, as if to say, what would qualify for a member of the Beis Din, there is a great deal, a qualitative exponential leap between what would qualify a person for the Sanhedrin, and to have a Sanhedrin Gadol of 70 such qualified people, bearing in mind that the Radvaz says that he wasn't even sure that there was one person who was worried to be a musmach in the first place, to have 70 people to be members of the Sanhedrin, that's quite ambitious, shall we say. And anything less than that is really not doing justice to what the Sanhedrin is all about, if you know what I mean. And in fact, I think it was Rav Herzog who was approached in his time with the idea of reinstating the Sanhedrin by a member of an emissary from the Israeli government. And his response was, he didn't think it was a good idea, so why not? What could be bad about it? Everything's coming back, let the Sanhedrin come back. So Herzog looked at this person and said, the Sanhedrin, in terms of what it's meant to be, is the ultimate authority in the land of Israel. And it mandates Torah law, and people that violate the law will be punished. And things as they stand, said Rav Herzog, that includes most of the Israeli government. Are you prepared to submit to that authority? Or do you want the Sanhedrin merely as a trophy title? So the member of government thought about it and said that he'd be in touch. And that was more or less the end of that. Recent years there's been further attempts, but in any case, this is the background. And it all begins with the smicha of Moshe to Yoshua. This is the fascinating discussion that surrounds the opinion of the Rambam. And all that is left for us is either to daven that Eliyahu should come and sort the whole thing out, or if the Rambam is saying that it's possible to have people on this caliber, so we should encourage that to be the case. And should they come forward, so then the matter can be revisit it again. We'll leave it over there for this evening.